Welcome to the Court of Appeals. This is oral argument number two for this panel today, and we have two non-oral matters we will also be considering. And I'll note for the record that this matter is A210947, Jared Malachy Feist, appellant or Feist, Commissioner of Public Safety as the respondent. Judges Werke and Holbrooks join me, Judge Sleater, and I'll be presiding today. And counsel, we do ask, keep your eye on the clock in some corner of your screen in the usual manner, 15 minutes apiece and up to 5 minutes for appellant's counsel if you wish to rebut. And we do ask that you identify your name for the record when you proceed. We are recording this proceeding and it will be available on the Judicial Branch website within 24 hours, so no other recording is allowed. So with those preliminary comments, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, your honors, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Grove and I represent the appellant, Mr. Feist. I just want to preface this by saying I'm unfortunately in a quarantine and I'm ill. And so I'm going to do my best to get through this. But I apologize if I needed to take a break.
And that's fine, Mr. Grove. And we're glad you're able to. And if you're not, you just let us know. Thank you.
Thank you, your honor. What I want to start with is the most pressing issue. Was the appellant in physical control of a motor vehicle that night? The district court ignored the totality of circumstances, ignored the overall situation, which is determinative, and instead decided that the mere presence of the appellant for mere seconds amounts to physical control. That's contrary to our case law, and more importantly, it's contrary to the legislative intent. What this court must consider, what the district court didn't, is the overall situation that this was a physical fight. Mr. Feist was a known passenger. He left the bar that night, did what we want people to do. He got a ride and he rode as a passenger, but during the course of that ride, he got into an argument, turned physical, and he punched the driver. The driver gets out and the transcript is clear that the driver immediately shuts his door and notices the appellant clumsily crawling across to continue to try to attack him. So what the driver says is immediately, I open the door and I rip him out. And we continued our physical fight. He's alone in the vehicle for mere seconds. And a key factor for this court is that the district court record is void of any evidence or testimony that Mr. Feist was ever seated in the driver's seat, or that he was ever upright in the driver's seat. What's undisputed is what he was not doing. He didn't touch the steering wheel. He didn't rev the engine. He didn't press the brake. He didn't lock the door. He didn't touch any controls to relinquish his status as a passenger and now assume the role of a driver.
Mr. Grove, I understand what you're saying, but this is really not much different than a person sitting behind in the driver's seat that's sound asleep. And maybe even the keys might be in the pocket. And we have affirmed the revocation of licenses in those instances. I mean, he did have the means. Should he have decided he was angry enough that he could have taken off, what was there to prohibit him from leaving?
Your Honor, in those situations, cases relied on by the respondent, a key factor that the Court of Appeals takes is who drove the vehicle to the point of rest. In a close call, which this is not a close call, that's a deciding factor to be helpful. And what we know is that Mr. Feist never drove the vehicle that night, never drove the vehicle, period. And according to the testimony, both from the driver, he was engaging in a physical fight. And so the other thing I would counter with that question, which is a good question, is I think it decides, or it's determinative of how long the individual is alone in that motor vehicle. If they're in the vehicle for a mere second or two or three, such as Snyder, the Court of Appeals has taken a position that in that situation, because it's case by case, the driver is not in physical control of the motor vehicle.
Now, Mr. look at. Grove, let me stop you for a moment. Snyder, the person was never inside the vehicle. He opened the door, put a foot in. I believe the facts are he had his hand on the door. And then when they saw the police approaching, he tossed the keys to his wife. So he was never behind the wheel. He was never in the driver's seat. In this case, it was Mr. Kuiper's testimony he estimated that your client was in the driver's seat for 3 to 5 seconds, I mean, physically in that position. So can you direct us to any case law in Minnesota where someone was actually in the driver's seat and then not found to be in physical control under totality of circumstances?
Yes, and that's Snyder, the original Snyder, which I rely in my brief and in my apposite cases. It's the older version. And in that Snyder, the individual's in the driver's seat, parks, gives the keys to the passenger, and then Snyder, while in the driver's seat, starts to consume alcohol. And when law enforcement arrives, he's outside of the vehicle urinating, and the Court of Appeals decided that he was not in physical control because he relinquished the keys to the passenger. Snyder's in the motor vehicle, in the driver's seat, in close proximity, had driven to the point of rest. None of that applies to what Feist did in this situation. In Snyder, the new version, he had the keys, he had been drinking, he's walking to the motor vehicle. A cop sees him as he's opening the door, keys in hand, and entering. Now, he didn't fully enter because the cop seized him, but he was certainly intending to enter the motor vehicle.
He had a foot in the motor vehicle.
Certainly intending to enter. Right. The Court of Appeals said it wasn't enough. Feist didn't do any of those things. Here's the problem with the district court.
I just want to clarify so that when I look back, because I read Snyder, the Court of Appeals case from 2008. In fact, I was on that panel. You're relying on Snyder versus Commissioner of Public Safety, the 1993 decision. That is your basis for your argument?
Correct. In my response to Your Honor's question about has there been precedent where an individual is behind the wheel?
Right. And that's the only case that you can direct us to?
Well, that's the only case I have off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Okay.
And what the district court did with this determination is forming a situation where if a known passenger who had been drinking ever enters or exits a motor vehicle from the driver's side compartment, they're now in physical control, subject to the implied consent law, and potentially guilty of a DWI. Well, that's erroneous.
Mr. Grove, it seems like, would you agree, at least as to the facts that the court found, we still review that for clear error? And the reason I'm asking is that I assume you agree with the concept. One can also relinquish. There's no dispute your client was a passenger. The question is whether did he relinquish or act, I can't remember the phrase you used, the reverse, in other words, rather relinquishing the keys, he's relinquishing what to be a passenger. It seems, for instance, in finding five, the court made a specific finding that, I can't remember her name, I think it's Schroed, observed this incident, and then the court finds petitioner slid into the driver's seat and the door was closed. Schroed testifies she expressed her concern to Kuypers that petitioner would drive away. In other words, there seems to be, there certainly was some factual dispute as his purpose for sliding over. Was it number one to continue the fight? Was it also potentially to drive? But it seems from that, the court found, at least from a credibility standpoint, and was satisfied that his purpose, it may have been twofold, but may have been to drive away. Would you agree that if that's what the court's finding, number one, would that be a clear error from the record itself? But secondly, do you agree that one can relinquish passenger status as well? That's essentially how I read the court's opinion, that as he slid over, that's your traditional, as we've already been talking about, physical control.
Yes. If that was a factual determination, it would be reviewed by clear error. I don't read that as a factual determination that Schroed believed that he intended to drive. Schroed can't form the belief of the intent of somebody else. But what we do know is Kuypers, who was the closest to the situation and the known driver, testified credibly, not disputed by the court, that Feist was sliding over, trying to continue to fight him. In that finding number five that Your Honor just referenced, Schroed says she saw the petitioner punching at Kuypers as Kuypers was getting out of the motor vehicle. Now, there's discrepancy as to whether that can be true, but that shows that this was a continued fight. And so going back and to answer the second question, yes, there are times where you can relinquish your status as a passenger. Mr. Feist didn't do that. He didn't take any of the steps to now regain control and take over what a driver would be doing. And that's the issue with the district court's determination. Any known passenger who'd been drinking and merely enters or exits a motor vehicle from the driver's side door is guilty in physical control. What about a scenario where the passenger side door is inoperable? What about a scenario where the there's a collision and the only way to enter or exit is through the driver's side door? And when you enter or exit for mere seconds, you don't touch any of the controls. You don't sit upright in that motor vehicle. Are you in physical control? The legislative intent in looking at Hansen clearly says no. They read, if passengers are found to be in physical control because of their proximity to the controls only, the purpose of a sensible law is defeated. That's what this district court did.
District court, Mr. Grove, in finding number 11, I know you address this in your brief, but I'd like to hear your oral response. The officer asked your client why he would try to drive if he were so intoxicated. And Mr. Feist answered, because I was stupid. And then the district court makes the finding that Mr. Feist never denied trying to drive the truck.
So I think that's clearly erroneous.
And based on what in the record?
Based on Officer Anderson's later testimony on cross-examination, where he acknowledges that because I'm stupid can mean a litany of things, that Mr. Feist was visibly assaulted, concussed. He was so severely assaulted that he wasn't making sense for the majority of the night. And that when Officer Anderson tried to bring him to the jail, they refused to take him in due to his significant injuries. The other thing is, this is not an intelligence test. Because I'm stupid, it may have been stupid to punch somebody who's driving a motor vehicle. We don't know what he was referring to when he said, because I'm stupid. But what we do know is for the about 2 hours that he was with Mr. Feist, Officer Anderson, that is, he asked Mr. Feist numerous times about driving, and undisputed in the transcript, Feist never acknowledged to driving or trying to drive while recorded. Conspicuously, this because I'm stupid never was recorded, not on body camera, not on audio. And Avery Schrode, the witness, was standing right next to them. I asked her on cross-examination, did you ever hear her, Mr. Feist, admit to driving or talking about driving? And her response was no. And so I don't think that that's an admission of driving or trying to drive. Because I'm stupid can mean many things.
Well, we're not the ones as a reviewing court, a court of appeals. We don't make those determinations. Don't we give deference to the finder of fact as far as what the comments meant?
Sure, unless it's clearly erroneous. And it's clearly erroneous when the district court discredits what he calls an argument that it could have meant many other things and everything else I just mentioned that Officer Anderson testified to. Officer Anderson's own testimony contradicts a decisive determination that because I'm stupid means I tried to drive. Let's look at his behavior and determine whether he tried to drive. He didn't touch anything. He didn't rev the engine. In Shane versus Commissioner of Public Safety, Shane was a known passenger like Feist. Shane is seated alone in the motor vehicle while the driver's being processed for DWI. Shane tells law enforcement, I'm going to drive home. I want to drive, and he's vulgar and drunk. Law enforcement tells Shane, you're not driving anywhere. Sit tight. When they're processing the driver, they see Shane lean out of camera sight or out of sight and rev the engine. He leaned fully into the driver's side component. The Court of Appeals decided that that was not physical control. What's the difference between Shane and Feist? Well, they both lean into the driver's side component. Shane tells the cops, I'm going to drive home. And Shane goes the next step and revs the engine. Shane's not in physical control. Mr. Feist is not in physical control.
But one thing with respect to Shane, that was a Supreme Court case. They reversed us. We affirmed the district court, and the Supreme Court, Justice Page wrote and said, under these specific circumstances, we're going to reverse. But Shane did not ever physically move into the driver's seat. That just seems to be an act that is so pivotal in our case law. And that was not present in Shane.
Well, he leaned over and he,
right. Well, he was out of sight apparently. And then you have the accelerator.
Sure. And I think the facts in that case are clear that he leaned into the driver's side component out of sight. So between that, telling cops that he's going to drive and going a step much further than Feist and revving the engine, and that not amounting to physical control, I don't see how Mr. Feist was in physical control. And if there aren't any other further questions, I'd ask the Court of Appeals to reverse that decision and rescind the revocation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grove. And you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal if you wish. Counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Sarah Mesera. I am an assistant attorney general here on behalf of respondent, Commissioner of Public Safety. This case is about whether a person who puts himself in the driver's seat of a running vehicle is considered to be in physical control of that vehicle within the meaning of the implied consent law. Decades of precedent from this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court established that physical control of a vehicle is interpreted broadly for purposes of protecting public safety and to deter individuals from getting behind the wheel of a vehicle while intoxicated. When Mr. Feist moved into the driver's seat of a running truck, the circumstances met the broad definition of physical control under State versus Starfield and State versus Woodward. Mr. Feist could have, without too much difficulty, driven the truck and become a source of danger to the public because he had the means to initiate any movement of that truck based on his close proximity to the operating controls. Furthermore, under a totality of the circumstances analysis, such as State versus Fleck, Mr. Feist was in physical control of the truck based on four key facts. First, Mr. Feist punched Mr. Kuipers in the face while Mr. Kuipers was driving, which caused this truck to stop and Mr. Kuipers to flee the vehicle, leaving Mr. Feist in the vehicle alone. Second, Mr. Feist himself moved into the driver's seat. Third, the driver's side door was closed. And fourth, the keys were in the ignition and the engine was running. Mr. Feist put himself in a position where he had unfettered physical control of the truck, and he could have driven if he wanted to. Simply put, in the moments that he was alone in that truck, there was nothing stopping him from setting out on an inebriated journey. And the danger of his position in that driver's seat was so obvious, particularly to Ms. Schrode, who told Officer Anderson at the scene and then testified at the hearing that she believed, based on Mr. Feist's position in the vehicle, as well as his actions in attacking Mr. Kuipers, that he might attempt to drive that vehicle.
Can I inquire? I'm sorry. As to those four points you were making, it seems like the majority of the case law, as Mr. Grove points out, except for the few that he highlights where there was an undisputed passenger status. So my question to you is this. I'm assuming you would agree it's undisputed prior to his sliding over, he was a passenger. So even with the punch, even with the keys in it, and even with the truck running, if he would have stayed put in the passenger seat, even though under our normal case law, it wouldn't take much for him to slide over, but he never relinquished the passenger status under that hypothetical. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, even with the punch, if he had remained in the driver's seat, if he had remained in the passenger seat, I believe that that it would be very difficult for the commissioner to establish physical control in that case. It would not be like, say, Henderson, where the person in the passenger seat grabbed the wheel or grabbed operating controls and was actually then controlling the vehicle from the passenger seat. But here, Mr. Feist went much further than simply punching the driver. He then moved over into the driver's seat himself.
So you seem to agree too, then, factually, the key fact is his reason for sliding over, and the court seemed to be satisfied, and I pointed out finding 5, but also perhaps the finding 11 that Judge Albrecht was referring to, put all together under the totality, that even if he had one purpose, he had two purposes, one of which was to drive potentially. But my point, I guess my question to you is, if literally the court had found, and it was clear that his sole purpose for sliding over was to follow out Mr. Kuipers and continue a fight, would you agree that would not have changed the passenger status in that scenario either?
Your Honor, if the district court had made a finding that it was not Mr. Feist's intent to drive the vehicle, that he was simply sliding over to continue a fight, I still believe that physical control might be able to be established there, because the focus of much physical control case law is on the opportunity to drive if the person wished. And with the opportunity to drive, he was alone in this vehicle. He put himself in this position where, but for Mr. Kuiper's pulling him out, he could have driven if he wanted to. But I do think, Your Honor, that there is much circumstantial evidence in the record, and given what the district court put in its factual findings, that there's plenty of evidence in this record to give the inference that it was Mr. Feist's intent to drive the vehicle this evening. Mr. Feist is described as having kind of some being uncooperative in the bar parking lot. He initially didn't even want to get into the car. They had to persuade him to get in. He then punched Mr. Kuiper's for no reason given. It's unknown why that punch occurred. He then got into the driver's seat himself. And then he made that "because I'm stupid" statement to Officer Anderson when Officer Anderson asked him, you know, why would you try to drive if you're so drunk? All of those parts of the record give a strong inference that it was Mr. Feist's intent to drive the vehicle. And as the district court noted, Mr. Feist did not testify. He did not provide any evidence that would counteract or rebut that inference that it was his intent to drive the vehicle that evening. And whatever Mr. Feist's intent was, again, he had the opportunity if he wanted to. That's the focus of cases such as Sens versus Commissioner of Public Safety, where in Sens, he actually professed, "I didn't intend to drive. Yes, I got into my vehicle, but I was just here to sleep." He put the keys in the back seat, but the court still found probable cause for physical control because he had the opportunity to drive if he would have wanted to, and he put himself in that position. And it should be noted that based on cases such as Starfield and Sens, intent does not need to be established in order to have a finding of physical control. Obviously, it is a consideration. And again, I think it is a strong inference here, but it is not a necessary finding. And I believe with the district court's findings of fact here, the district court at the very least credited Officer Anderson's testimony that Officer Anderson believed Mr. Feist gave a tacit admission to attempting to drive with that "because I'm stupid" statement. And the district court specifically pointed out that Feist did not provide any further evidence to rebut this inference that it was his intent to drive the vehicle. And Your Honors, I think an important thing to focus on in this case is that this was not Mr. Feist being drugged into the driver's seat. This was not him being forced into the driver's seat for circumstances outside of his control. This was him doing this on his own. He made a voluntary choice to punch Mr. Kuiper's. It was also an affirmative action by him to start attacking a driver while he's driving. This is not a situation such as a case like Roberts where a person is involuntarily put into the seat. And furthermore, this is not like Shane versus Commissioner of Public Safety relied upon by opposing counsel. In Shane, it was police officers that kind of created that situation where there was an initial DWI traffic stop. The officers ordered the driver out of the vehicle. They also ordered Shane to remain in the vehicle. And in that scenario, the officers ordered Shane to remain in a running truck on his own, which is just a very unique situation and different from what Mr. Feist did here. Nobody ordered him to stay in. He took all these actions on his own. And it's essentially just a different situation from Shane entirely. And the district court correctly addressed Mr. Grove's argument and also found that it was not anywhere close to that unique situation in Shane. And Your Honors, I would just want to briefly address the length of time here, that this was, of course, a quick situation. But the danger posed, again, was so obvious to the two individuals there that they took quick action to not have Mr. Feist remain in that position for long. But for the actions of Mr. Kuiper's, there's no telling what Mr. Feist would have done from the driver's seat or how long he would have remained there. And the quick thinking of Mr. Kuiper's and Ms. Schrode to take Mr. Feist out of that position to prevent him from having this opportunity to drive should not be used to create a no harm, no foul situation here. That under the totality, yes, this was a quick amount of time in the driver's seat. But given the totality of the circumstances, Mr. Feist was in physical control of the vehicle. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I would just simply close by stating that Mr. Feist was in physical control of the vehicle under the totality of the circumstances. And I'm therefore going to ask this court to affirm the decision of the district court and sustain the revocation of Mr. Feist's driving privileges. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bezra. And Mr. Grove, as soon as you see the clock at 5, there it is. You may provide a rebuttal if you wish.
Thank you, Your Honor. First thing I want to address, as for Mr. Feist and his lack of testimony, it's not his burden. Mr. Feist has no burden to testify and tell the court what happened that night. The burden was on the Commissioner of Public Safety to establish that they can prove by clear and convincing evidence that his actions amounted to the legal definition of physical control. And they shouldn't have met that burden in this case. As for Avery Schrode's testimony, it seems the focus here today is on her testimony and her belief as to what Feist's intent was. Schrode doesn't have any foundation or capability of forming the belief as to what Feist's intent was. And his intent isn't really too relevant because in the longest, it would be 5 seconds. In the shortest, it would be near immediate or milliseconds. It's clear, according to the known driver that night, Kuipers, that Feist was coming over after him to continue to fight and attack him. So him being in that driver's side component alone cannot amount to physical control simply because he's in mere proximity to the controls. Just because the car is running plays no factor. He didn't touch the keys. He didn't turn the keys on. And he didn't touch any of the controls to relinquish his status as a known passenger simply by his proximity in exiting the vehicle. It would be very bad public policy for this court to affirm, because what that would mean is any known passenger who is alone in the vehicle and has to exit or chooses to exit from the driver's side or enter from the driver's side when they do nothing else is now subject to the implied consent law and in physical control of a motor vehicle. It's contrary to the legislative intent and it's contrary to our precedents. And I'm asking the court to reverse and rescind the revocation. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you to both counsel. And we hope you're feeling better soon, Mr. Grove, and full health. And we will now take the matter under advisement. We appreciate your answers to our questions in the briefing, and we wish you an order within a 90-day statutory timeline. And you both may have a good day.